Okay. So let me summarize what we got. So I'm sorry, I mean, it came out a lot less organized than I was hoping. But the summary is really, really simple. So we have this completely natural control theory operation of connecting one out feedback, connecting one output to one input. It clearly defines a metamonoid, obviously, and the metamonoid operations are, so disjoint union is just block diagonal direct sum, and the stitching of output A to input B, calling the result C, so calling the input of A and the output of B, calling both of them C, is the operation which takes this matrix to that matrix, and now these are matrices with labeled rows and columns. So here the labels of the columns are A, B, and S, the labels of the rows are A, B, and S, and here the labels are C and S, C and S, and S stands for the remaining labels. So theta is a row, epsilon is a row, phi is a column, psi is a column, chi is an xi is an n minus 2 by n minus 2 matrix. And you can check that this is respected by the operations. So in fact, right, the entry here should be a row. And it is a row because it's an epsilon plus a row times a scalar divided by a scalar. Maybe the most interesting thing is here, because this is supposed to be a block, and indeed it is a block because it's a column times a row, which gives a block, divided by a scalar, plus a block. Okay? And finally, by just brute force computations, we know that this is a tangle invariant. If you assign to the crossing between A and B, if you assign to it this matrix, you get a tangle invariant. The tangle invariant is an interesting tangle invariant. The resulting not invariant is not interesting. Well, at least on the one example that we computed, it came out to be one. So, believe me, you can check on all other knots, it will always be uninteresting. Okay. So this I understand very well. The next bit, okay, sorry. I understand it very well, and I understand it from several perspectives. So I gave you the control theory the perspective, which is really, really catchy and very, very, very trivial. But I also understand it from, you know, it comes from Lie theory, it will come out of G0, later on, the Lie algebra that we've been studying, it comes from several other directions, and I understand it from several of those directions. From several of these directions, it turns out that there is an extension of this, and I want to describe this extension. So let me call it the omega, or the scalar, the omega extension. Okay? But the extension I don't understand from the perspective of linear control theory. So from this perspective of extremely simple-minded matrix operations, this is going to be very, it's going to look artificial, unexplained. I don't know why it's there. Okay? So, basically, all you do is, instead of, I think I call it M of S, I should have called it gamma zero of S. So gamma zero of a set of strands is S by S matrices. And I've just defined operations. So you do, so instead, you switch to a scalar extension, an extension of this by a single scalar. So you replace gamma of s by, so this gets replaced, sorry, gamma 0 of s gets, so gamma of s is set to be, so gamma 0 is replaced by gamma, and gamma is replaced to be, is set to be your scalars, so whatever the ground field is, cross S by S matrices. Okay? And then, I just need a language or a notation for this. So the way I will write it is, I will write it as, well, here is the matrix part, I'll write it as a matrix. And then on top of the matrix, I will write the labels of the row, of the columns, so H1 up to HN. On the left, I write the labels of the rows, so let me just write it 1 up to N. Down here, I write 1 up to N. And now I have one empty space. So in this empty space, I will put the scalar, which I will call omega. Okay? So I just need to tell you how all of these operations extend. So I need to tell you what's omega 1 A1 union omega 2 A2. And the answer is you multiply the scalars and take the block diagonal disjoint direct sum of the matrices. So this will be, this will be omega 1, omega 2, A1, A2. Okay? And the really interesting operation is the stitching. And the stitching does the following. So if I stitch, so under gamma, instead of under gamma 0, if I want to go from alpha, beta, theta, gamma, delta, epsilon, phi, psi, xi, labeled A, B, and S, into something labeled I should have used the new notation. So now suppose I'm in gamma, so I have an omega here, and these are the labeled ABS, ABS. And now this should go to...
Do you mean the ones and the n's?
The what?
If you have an omega, don't... Like, there's the block, but then aren't there...
Yeah, so the labels here are one... I call them 1 to n, but okay, here okay. I call them a, b, and s. So now I need to go to a c and s. The matrix part is the same as over there, so I will not copy it, but maybe I'll just same. And the scalar part is, well, somehow 1 minus beta plays a prominent role, so you multiply by 1 minus beta. Okay? And that's it. Oh, sorry, and I finally need to tell you where the crossings go. So the crossings go to the same place with scalar part 1. So R... A, B, plus minus in gamma is equal, is in gamma is equal to, the matrix part is the same matrix part, 1 and 1 minus t to the plus minus 1, 0 t to the plus minus 1, a, b, and this is 1. just took me a long time to copy it, but, I'm sorry. And, okay. So, I guess I already have a question. I mean, this is a genuine question. I have no idea what is going on. I mean, this works. I can prove that it works. But what does it mean in terms of matrices? So, the thing it is similar to is determinants. So, roughly, so in fact, this operation can be written as a combination of row and column operations. I don't exactly remember, I haven't memorized what it is, but it's a certain combination of row and column operations, and at some point you need to multiply by the scalar 1 minus beta, and then you keep track of this scalar like you do in determinants. So, you know, in when you compute determinants by Gaussian elimination, you kind of do all the row and column operations, but put on the side, mark on the side which scalars you've multiplied by, and then the product of all of these scalars becomes the determinant. So similarly here, I put on the side the scalar that I've multiplied by, and then the product of all of these scalars becomes the upper left entry. So it's related to determinants. Furthermore, I can show that if you start from an n by n matrix and you stitch each, you know, you stitch each label to the next so that at the end you'll get a 1 by 1 matrix, the 1 by 1 matrix that you get is silly, but the scalar you get at the upper left will be related to the determinant of the matrix. It's not quite the determinant of the matrix because it's not even, I mean, well, it's going to be the determinant of something like the matrix minus the permutation matrix, where where the permutation is the permutation that you've used in order to stitch, the order of stitchings. Okay, so there is some relationship with determinants, but I don't know. I just don't know what part of linear algebra it corresponds to. It's sort of, I'm not sure. You know, it's basic linear algebra that I don't know. Okay? Anyway, this said, it's easy to implement, so let me implement it. So, first of all, in gamma calculus, instead of saving an element like this, I will save it as the symbol gamma followed by omega, comma, a quadratic form, where the quadratic form is as before. And then the implementation is basically the same implementation as before. So the printing is, is the same printing. It will print an omega at the upper left, where omega is the actual value of our current omega. All the implementation is the implementation is mostly the same. So to multiply two gammas, you add the quadratic forms and multiply the scalar parts. To stitch, you use the same formulas as before, except now I named 1 minus beta mu. So instead of everywhere before it was written as divide by 1 minus beta, now I write it as divide by mu. And the omega part just gets multiplied by this mu, so I output gamma of the old omega times the mu. So everything is the same, except I add with a tiny addition, and so now if I take the same Z as before and stitch twice, I get something even more horrible than before. So this is the same as before. This is the new scalar part. And the only thing I can say about it is that it's the same as if you stitch it in the other order. So if I stitch it in the other order, so if I check meta-associativity, the scale, well, we've already verified that the matrix parts are the same, but now we also learn that the scalar parts are the same. So this really is a metamonoid. Here is the true. Now, you can also check that Rademeister 3 still works, and it does. You can also check that the two types of Rademeister 2 work, and they do. And now I can compute the invariant of 817, and it is non-trivial. The matrix part becomes 1, but the scalar part is, T was an arbitrary number. Alternatively, you can think of it as a formal variable, so you got a polynomial in T, and this polynomial is the so-called Alexander polynomial of the knot. So, if you just use the built-in Alexander polynomial, it comes out to be the same. Okay? So, what should I say? We will derive this omega extension later from more complicated directions, from G0, from other places. But there should be a stupid linear algebra way to see it, right? The same way that this was seen from very simple-minded linear algebra. I don't know what it is. So I really want to know. If you have ideas, let me know. And the second thing is, the whole thing actually, at the end, once you use this apparently arbitrary extension, you get an invariant. The invariant is the Alexander polynomial. It's extremely useful. This actually is the most efficient way to compute the Alexander polynomial. So, if you have a knot with 1,000 crossings and you want to compute its Alexander polynomial, that's what you should do. Okay? And maybe one last comment before we move on. So I've described this as a metamonoid, but it also has extension. Sorry, it also has the corresponding operations to strand doubling and strand reversal. So it's actually a meta-Hopf algebra, but the description of these is a bit harder. And I'll only flash the description. So here is the, so this is the, this is the description of the of the stitching. I've already shown it to you. I didn't tell you there is also a trace. Anyway, this is the trace. The strand doubling and a strand reversal are given by rather complicated formulas, but they exist. I don't know how to motivate them from the same motivations that I started today, only from other directions. Okay, yes.
Maybe I didn't understand this, but it seemed that we restricted ourselves to 3x3 matrices when we did the sort of this operation with the machine so far. But can we do it with more dimensions?
No, we never restricted ourselves. In fact, the computation, I mean, in fact, at some point I was printing very big matrices, right? This was within the computation of 817, okay. And these were big matrices. So in the implementation,
I'm interested in this because of the alpha.
Where was the implementation? Where did the implementation go? This is, oh, here. Yeah, so in the implementation, I overestimated. I thought I could fit it in 1 hour, and I should have spread it into three perhaps. So you see, lambda here is not a matrix; it's a quadratic form. Okay. Now, alpha is a second derivative. It's the derivative of the quadratic form with respect to the row variable and the column variable. So this is a scalar. Okay? Here I have the full quadratic form, but I set the variables T alpha and TA and TB and HA and HB to zero. So this is the quadratic form corresponding to the remaining matrix. So, and likewise, this will be a linear form, and this will be a linear form. So alpha, beta, gamma, and delta actually represent scale. So alpha, beta, gamma, delta represent scalars, but theta and epsilon represent rows and sort of the remaining row, and likewise this rows, and this likewise this represents the remaining columns, and this represents a full matrix because it's a quadratic form, not just a.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a quadratic form with some of the variables set to zero, and then you can check that on quadratic forms the operations are just this. Are just the right.
Right. Okay.
Operations. Maybe I overestimate.
So there's some sort of recursion that occurs. So I mean.
No, it's not a recursion. It's not a recursion. It's just.
I mean, in a sense, when you set the equations like x2 equals y2, and when you set something like that, it turns out that you can. You can use the same formulas that you use for a 3x3 matrix and sort of iterate it.
So, no, it's more like I've considered all the remaining variables in bulk. I just gave them one name.
I have sort of just like a technical question.
Yeah.
So it's like very clever to turn it into a quadratic form and then recover stuff by kind of differentiating formally.
Yeah.
Is it like the most Mathematica way of doing it in Mathematica?
Oh, my goal here was to fit it into a very short program. Not to be efficient. So it's actually not so. This algorithm is the most efficient way to compute the Alexander polynomial, but this is not the most efficient implementation of this algorithm.
Okay.
Maybe I should have rewritten it for the purpose of this class, or
maybe well, I think should it's, have. I think it's nice to look at like this.
Yes, but yeah. Okay. Yeah, maybe it's too clever. So it's hidden. So, yeah, okay. So, okay. Here, theta is a row, epsilon is a row, phi is a column, psi is a column, and everything matches. So if you, right, I mentioned it, right? This is a row plus a row multiplied by scalar, so it's still a row. So when I put something, when I put things in the right place, they're of the right type. And likewise, this is a box because it's a column times a row. When you multiply a column by a row, you get a box. And so everything works here. And then the thing I've skipped is the fact that if you work with quadratic forms, the formulas look exactly the same.
I see. Sorry. Yeah. So.
So.
I think my confusion was just that. So I mean, at the beginning, you had this thing for linear control theory, and then it seemed that you did just an example of how you would solve it for a 3x3. But it turns out it's just a general formula.
Yeah.
I see it. I'm looking at it now. So.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay. I'm sorry. Maybe, you know, sort of, I was meaning to start telling you about finite type invariants today, but I think maybe it's better to just stop early. I don't know, I ended up spending 2 confused hours telling you confused things. But within it, there was at least 20 minutes of beautiful mathematics, namely this silly control theory thing that actually gives a metamonoid and it's a highly non-trivial formula. You wouldn't have guessed it. So I hope at least that much you've enjoyed. So let's stop now and hopefully do better next time.